Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food production and food consumption. Susan Bradford checking in for yet another Thursday in the ongoing series of exposing the truth, shining sunlight on corruption so that we can kill it like a disinfectant. How are you, Susan?
I'm doing very well, Trent. How about yourself?
Perfect. I'm looking for some more disinfectant. Did you have any handy?
Well, what I'd like to provide today are some tools possibly for our citizens to take their country back. So it's a disinfectant of sorts.
No, I don't think anybody cares about that. You got anything more interesting?
this is hopefully this will be your meat and potatoes and your vegetables.
Excellent. Sweet. Well, you know, I say that tongue in cheek, obviously, but truth of the matter is it's our own complacencies that's allowed us to this point. So now we got to do double time to get out of it.
Yes, we do. And I think Americans had full faith and confidence in their government, and they allowed a lot of the corruption to go on unchecked. But the positive to this is a silver lining is that there are legal remedies at our disposal. How nations have employed jurisprudence and legal precedents to repudiate illegal debt. And as you know, our country essentially lost its financial sovereignty with the illegal and unconstitutional passage of the Federal Reserve System in 1913. And I say it's illegal because the Federal Reserve Act did not have a quorum to pass. It was sponsored by one member of the House of Representatives, one senator, and then signed off by President Wilson, did not have a quorum, did not receive a quorum of votes. And it's unconstitutional because only Congress has the authority by our Constitution to print money. So they essentially, these private bankers from the City of London seized control of our financial system, and they have been controlling us ever since and generating illegal debt in the process. So today I'd like to talk about how nations have repudiated debt. And I think within this discussion, we can find some solutions that we can apply to the United States.
So I want to do that, but I want to tell you a little story before we get to that.
Okay.
Last week, I spoke in a high school in York, Nebraska, and excuse me, I had 100 students, which represented four classes. Doesn't matter to that, but there was 50 kids in each of my presentations, and I was talking about debt, and I was talking about exactly what you just described, except I didn't go into the Federal Reserve in 1913, but I said, how many of you in this room think that subsidies are a good idea? And Susan, roughly 40 of the 50 kids present raised their hand. And I went around the room and I asked them why. And they all had, well, we need to help people. We need to help people, all this. And then I said, did you know that with the current U.S. debt at nearly $35 trillion, that means that each one of you in this room, every person, every baby born yesterday, currently owes the federal government $102,766. And then I went through how all of that happens and how spending comes back. I re-asked the question after the discussion, and guess how many kids raised their hands supporting subsidies after I had explained a subsidy?
Hopefully zero.
Well, there was actually four. But no, we don't put it in the context that, and by the way, $102,776 was last week's per person debt. It continues to accumulate. But if we would start talking about, here's what you owe the federal government right now, maybe it would garner people's attention. So I am really curious, because I did a whole history of the U.S. banking this week and actually airing that on Loose Tales. But I saw that Woodrow Wilson thing from 1913, knew that it was one senator. Where do we go from here? What do we do about it?
Okay, I will get into that. And I also wanted to just add to what you had said, that debt is the means through which we lose our sovereignty. And if, let's say, for example, if every American citizen owed $200,000 in debt to the federal government, the federal government or these international bankers could call in that debt, and you might have to sell your home. And for all the assets you have, they have placed themselves as first creditor. So they will end up acquiring your assets and leaving, you know, you, the people of the nation, with nothing. So debt is something that we want to, you know, extricate ourselves from. So it's a big problem.
It is a big problem, but we're conditioned to have 4 credit cards, 2 debit cards, a loan at the bank, and a big house payment. We've just been conditioned to do that. So we don't even think about the government being in debt because we're told we should be.
And the government's very, you know, reckless with spending. And I think it's ironic that with credit cards, in order to have better credit, you have to spend more money. You have to have more credit cards and put yourself in greater debt in order to be more credit worthy. So it's like they're playing a game against us. And of course, the banks set the credit rates, and they make profit off of our debt, while they only give us, 1% interest for the money that they hold for us. So it's kind of like an unbalanced system.
Yeah, I never even really thought about it until we have 3 daughters, 25 to 18. And one of them the other day told me, well, I got to get a credit card and start using it because I have no credit rating. And I'm like, oh, that's the trap that we fall into.
This is best to pay cash if you can. Pay cash for everything. Don't put yourself in debt. Okay. So going back to some of the history behind debt, there was the International Law Commission of the United Nations has provided tools for nations to repudiate debt that are accumulated by creditors from new states. So we have in 1983, we have the Vienna Convention of the Succession of States in respect to state property, archives, and debt, which was adopted by the UN General Assembly in 1983. Now, when you talk about succession of states, in a sense, the United States could be considered to be a successor state. Our government is essentially a corporation. It has been bankrupt and reorganized. Through each bankruptcy, a new regime is essentially established, and somehow we, the people, are left holding the debt for that new incorporation when it's not really our debt to have. So previously, legal scholars have argued that states like the colonial states, and we are now a colony of Great Britain, that we should automatically assume the debt of the previous regime. But increasingly, the trend is towards stating that new regimes should not bear the burden of debt of a success as a successor state. Because there is a conflict. You know, the debt that was accrued did not benefit the people. It was not generated by us. So why should we in turn be left holding the bag for it? So it's called the principle of the universal succession of automatic assumption of colonial powers, rights, and the obligation of new states. And this is called the new clean slate principle. So if there's a new regime, you don't have to assume the debt of the previous one. And so among the leading proponents of this idea is a man by the name of Toulouse Sorong. I hope I'm pronouncing the name correctly. And he has argued that there are tools provided in international law that legitimatize the unilateral acts of nations to repudiate their debt. The convention was adopted by 54 states. These were previous colonial powers. It was passed by a resolution adopted by the General Assembly of the United Nations. Therefore, it's a reference in international law and provides a legal precedence for the unilateral repudiation of national debt. That's unilateral, is one-sided, by the colonial powers telling the mother countries, like the colonizers, that they do not owe that debt and they're not going to pay it. Now, of course, the creditor nations, including the UK, the US, and Canada, all of whom are controlled by Rothschild, did not sign off on it. They did not want to allow that to happen. But there is a strong legal precedence for the unilateral repudiation of debt. For example, Indonesia, 1956, revolutionary China, In 1933 to 34, Franklin Delano Roosevelt extinguished the rights of debtors to be repaid in gold. The Soviet Union in 1917, and I'm going to get into this a little bit later, but I think the repudiation of debt by the Soviet Union, like they did not want to take on the burden of the Romanov debt, is interesting because the Romanovs were controlled by the Rothschilds, as was the Soviet Union, and that the Rothschilds refused to accept the debt of the previous nation, and they reneged on all of that that was owed to creditors and foreign nations, foreign bankers, in order to establish a clean slate. And ironically, the arguments that they used apply currently to our current government. So I think that we have some tools there.
Yeah, we have plenty of precedent for this one. Susan Bradford, my guest, we're talking about debt and repudiation of that debt, and I'm all in. We'll be back with segment two. Roll out after this. Welcome back. Roll out. Trent Luce, yet another Thursday, one day closer to Easter and spring. All right, Susan, the Rothschilds apparently don't want other people's debt. I don't want other people's debt either. I didn't incur any of this debt at the national level. What do we do?
Yeah, so imagine, you know, that the recent Francis Scott Key bridge that fell. You know, in most circumstances, the boat, the insurance company for the boat would pay for that. But Joe Biden said, oh, no, the federal government will cover that. And why does he want to do that? Well, presumably he wants to build a smart city in Maryland. And the smart city, of course, shores up power for the elites. We have them giving money to illegal aliens. You know, they're giving free cash, free housing, free education, free medical care. Americans are left holding the debt. They're losing their housing. So the debt that we're accruing is not being used to benefit our own citizens. And yet they're trying to obligate us. There is legal precedence that if a government acts in this way and they try to obligate the citizens to owe debt that was merely used not to benefit the citizens, but was used to shore up power for the elites, and also to use for purposes like to benefit themselves and to benefit third parties and not the citizens, the citizens do not owe that debt. But you have to properly challenge it in order for this to take place. So I can go through with the Soviet Union.
Yeah, I think that's excellent.
Okay, so in 1918, the Soviet Union repudiated its debt. In 1905, Trotsky was a Soviet Russian revolutionary working on behalf of the Rothschilds, said that the communist revolutionaries were not going to pay the Tsar's debt. And that we as a victorious nation are free to reject it. So he submitted a manifesto for the Soviet worker delegates, and these were the reasons that he gave for why the Soviets did not owe the debt of the Tsars. And of course, the Romanovs were trying to expand their empire on behalf of the Rothschild. He had actually married his wife. Was a Rothschild, and arguably she helped bring down that dynasty. But he said the government is autocratic. It has no confidence of the people. It was not properly representative of the people. The government's on the brink of bankruptcy, and the people cannot afford to pay more taxes that would be imposed upon them in order to cover this debt. The government has given credits to the landowners from the people's money. Jobs are being lost. Factories are being shut down. There's a stagnation of trade. Merchants, contractors are using the public's money to enrich themselves at the public's expense. You know, and we have every one of these instances.
Oh, absolutely. It's like you're reading the headlines from today.
Exactly. And these were the grounds that they used to repudiate debt. Like, look, this is not, it cannot be properly borne by the people. Banks are failing. The government struggles daily with civil unrest. The roads are being neglected. You know, I'm sure in your town, as mine, you can see potholes that for a long time have not been properly filled. There is not enough money for the essential care of the people. The economy is sick due to government negligence. Our gold reserves are down. So the government, they cannot cover the government debt or expenditures. In fact, the money that is now being paid out is only being used to cover the interest on the debt. They cannot even afford to pay back the debt. The loans that the government has accrued exceed the means of a payment. They're only covering the interest. Public officials are robbing the treasury. people are fighting to survive. One way or another, the government needed to be overthrown, and we needed to charge off the debt. So in the case of the United States, you could say that we have grounds to decouple ourselves from the control of the City of London, and from the Rothschilds, and then to have that debt repudiated. There is a legal basis for that to happen.
It would be really interesting once we, because we are going to go public with this and take steps to make it happen. But it'll be really interesting to see who the first to object to it will be.
That's true.
That'll be very telling.
I think a lot of these government workers essentially, I mean, they are employees of the federal government, and therefore they work for the corporation of the United States, which is ultimately controlled by Rothschild. So I think they have to serve that agenda, even if they grandstand and speak against it, you know, to generate votes. But we do have a basis for this because, you know, for example, a lot of these expenditures towards illegals are being done by politicians who want to bring the illegals into their districts so that they can have a greater population and more power and also more access to government contracts and payments. So this is more about the politicians and leaders serving themselves rather than, you know, using that money to serve the people. It's working against the people's interest.
I was intrigued. I thought of it when you walked through the Russian example there from the teens, 19-teens. In 1837, it was a severe depression in the United States.
Correct.
And Martin Van Buren had created the free bank system because the two previous banks, as you earlier indicated, went bankrupt. The First National Bank and the Second National Bank went bankrupt. Martin Van Buren coordinated in a time of great despair in this nation a free banking system. And initially, the depositors thought that there would not be enough money to get their money out. So they had a run on the bank and they had to start telling people, no, we won't give you your money, which just caused a greater fear. And we have hints of that happening again today, because there's plenty of people saying that if you don't have it in gold, silver, or pork bellies, you're in trouble. I'm good on pork bellies. I'm not so good on gold and silver, Susan, just so you know.
That's true. And I think like the way that they've set up the government, the banking system has been done to put us into debt and to obligate us to the interests of, the banking district in London. Like originally with the founding of this country, we had a sound banking system. Once London got wind of the fact that we could print our own money enough to, you know, to cover our commerce and what we needed for the nation, they ensured that the Bank of England could only print the money, and that any other forms of money, having banks print money, would be rendered illegal. So we had a sound financial system up through the beginning of the world wars. The gold standard was established in order to generate enough money, coverage for money, to fight the world wars. And then once we had a gold-backed standard, the dollars could no longer be denominated into gold. And so they had to move into a fiat currency and then a petrodollar. And they continued to outspend the needs of the nation, and even what could be sustained by first gold and then oil. And they have generated the debt themselves. And so the argument that would be made by law is that they knew the risk that they were that they would be incurring by engaging in these practices. Like the Bush administration, for example, knew the risk and expenditure that would be accrued by waging war against Iraq, which did not benefit the American people. It was used to seize oil for Israel and I believe did not even have the approval of the United Nations. Yet we, the American people, are left holding that debt. It did not benefit us. It was not in the public interest and may even have been illegal. And so there are mechanisms available for the people to actually audit very systematically all the debt that has been accrued. You can determine what is legitimate debt, what is illegitimate debt, and what is illegitimate debt the nation can challenge and can, you know, it has the there are legal tools available for countries and for the people to challenge that, so that ensuring they would not owe that debt.
Who would be qualified to do that type of an audit of the nation?
That's a good question. I think it would have to be done with the consent of the government, and so you would have to petition the government to have that done, and that could be done through a lobbying group, possibly like a nonprofit, or even a reform group. But I think you'd want to have attorneys behind you, and who would be qualified. You'd want obviously an independent auditor, not an independent auditor subsidized by the government, but somebody who is not financially invested in the outcome beyond his or her role as a citizen.
Why would the government agree to have this happen, knowing what the outcome would be if it was honest?
Because the government, it was set up as a corporation to provide products and services for the people. That's how it justifies its existence and how it generates profit. So they technically have to serve the will of the people, and they are doing largely what they're doing because they argue that they have our consent. Oh, you voted for us, so we have the power to act on your behalf. But if you make it clear to them that that is not the case, you can then challenge it. And you'd also have to point out where the illegitimacy occurred. So for example, on my recent...
Wait. We're going to pick it up with, for example, okay, when we come back in this segment made possible by Certified Piedmontese. You don't need to go to the store. We deliver the tender beef to your door. CPBeef.com, Susan Bradford, and starting with, for example, after this. Back in three. Welcome back, Roll Route. Sorry about that, Susan. My clock said that we have to do, for example, after the break. We're here now. Okay, so for example, we're talking about an audit.
Okay, so for example.
And consent. We haven't had consent of the people for quite some time, I might add.
If you look at a number of these treaties that our governments are signing on our behalf, they're all worded in such a way as to state that this is being signed of your volition. It's voluntary on whether or not you agree to do what we want you to do, like what the nations to do. So our leadership is voluntarily submitting to these globalist plans. But I think if there's sufficient public outrage, you could challenge that. So they're doing it because they want to be in with the elite. So I
want to just interject there because, you know, I happen to be in Omaha today, and in my home state, in the biggest city of this state, which is largely conservative, I marvel at the number of people who do not agree with what I just said, that this government is not bringing about the consent of the people. And my estimation is that there's maybe still 50% of the American public that's pretty happy with where we're at. Do you disagree with that number?
I think that they could be happy. I think in terms of not having the consent, I think it's not the informed consent of the people. They're not properly informing us of what they're doing on our behalf. You know, they're taking actions that are not in the interests of the people. They are essentially serving a select few.
I take your point there because I'm in it every day. I'm in and trying to get to the nuts and bolts every day, and I see what's happening. Most people just take on at face value what they're told, don't go looking at the nuts and the bolts. And so if you don't look at the nuts and the bolts, you don't see how the whole machine is falling apart because the nuts are loose.
Yes, that's correct. Like how many people know that many of our ports and airports and maritime ports have been sold off to foreign countries? Think about the national security implications of that.
I don't think a fraction, 10% maybe.
And that's a problem. And so if you're able to restore financial sanity and sovereignty to your country, you can actually claim those assets back for your country and tell Saudi Arabia and China, for example, that we are repossessing those ports. They're now going to be put under the control of Americans.
Okay, I kind of derailed you, but I just wanted to add that just in terms of getting back to the consent of the people, because that's the premise of our nation. People are in a representative republic representing the consent of the people who put them there.
Correct. And I think largely our government, I don't know to the degree to which our elections might be rigged or influenced, but they are run by lobbyists. Many of our most successful politicians raise a phenomenal amount of money from private interest groups. And once those elected officials assume office, they're very much inclined to serve the interests of the private corporations over those of the average citizen. So I think in that sense, those who have the most money and who are able to put that money into the political process have the greatest voice in Capitol Hill. And those who have acquired the most money are usually those who have been granted that money from the federal government or from the government itself. So there's a revolving door between free, I guess, between the elite who are working in commerce and in business and the government. And it becomes a very self-serving, self-perpetuating elite that is working against the interests of the American people. And I'm not talking about, you know, Democrat, Republican, whether Biden or Trump would be a better politician. I'm sure that, you know, our nation would be evenly split on that. I'm talking more about the system itself is broken and is not properly serving us. But
for what it's worth, you piqued my interest, because as much as I took a deep dive this week into the port of Baltimore to see how influential and important it was for particularly food and agriculture, I never looked at who owned it. I just did that. You know who owns the port of Baltimore?
I don't. I'd love to hear.
The state of Baltimore, the people of Baltimore, which is another interesting dynamic that we can get to later.
That is interesting.
Particularly if you think about what you just said, if there is a motivation to turn Baltimore, which is pretty much a wreck before the economic collapse that's coming to it now, to turn that into something of a poster child for smart cities, and the port is owned by the state of Maryland, the groundwork's all laid.
And they can rise up and reject it. Reject what the federal government is trying to do. And that is an opportunity for them to raise their voice and organize.
Yep, absolutely. All right. So yeah. We keep going down in rabbit holes, Susan.
Okay. So going back to the, for example, I recently saw a video. I believe the host was Nicholas Bieniemann, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He's a gentleman from England. And he was interviewing a police officer from England who had said that he had uncovered massive corruption within his local district, where the money that was being given to the government was being redirected into offshore accounts. It, you know, was being used to benefit those officials. And he said that a lot of those individuals were connected to Jeffrey Epstein and these corrupt networks. So he had informed them that, look, I want to pay every debt that I owe and every debt that is lawful for me to owe, but I legally cannot support a crime syndicate. So unless I cannot financially support a crime syndicate because that would make me a co-conspirator. So unless you resolve the corruption within your ranks, I cannot in good faith or lawfully pay the debt that I owe. And I believe that he was successful. So that is an example of being engaged, you know, with your government, holding them accountable, and then being able to use the power that you have as a citizen, which is, you know, somewhat of the power of the purse of what, you know, we contribute in taxes, to then hold them accountable and to even withhold, you know, do so lawfully. I'm not advocating that you don't pay your taxes, but that is a tool that some have very effectively used in order to push back.
Gordon Call used it until they killed him.
That's true. You have to be kind of very careful and circumspect in how you go about it.
You know the Gordon Call story?
Do you want to discuss it? Or?
No, we'll say that for another day, but he was of this line of thinking in the 80s, and he was a North Dakota farmer, and he became enemy of the state because he was out educating people about the very thing we're talking about here today.
Do you think that today more people are awake and aware? Because I think a few decades ago, what we were talking about today would be dismissed as conspiracy theory and radical. But I think a lot of people have seen the abuses of government, and we're looking at many individuals. I can think of Florida specifically, who are losing their homes. They cannot afford the property taxes, the increases in insurance, utilities, and they're pricing ordinary Americans out of their homes. And it's being done through a lot of kind of questionable financial practices. And I can think of some involve Russian oligarchs and others who have laundered money out of their own countries, parked it into real estate in Florida and elsewhere. And a lot of that money, frankly, came from the United States. You know, it was given from our government overseas, which disappeared into private hands. And then those elite come back into our country, buy up our real estate, price our own citizens out of the market. And then we're left having to pay, greatly increased property taxes and insurance and federal taxes and so forth in order to subsidize the spending and the misdirection and misappropriation of our assets.
That's exactly what's happening today.
Yeah, it's becoming a big problem.
Yeah, I looked it up while you were talking there. Gordon Call, they killed him in 1983. But the farm crisis of the 80s got the farmers alert, but the overall economy in the 80s and the general public was fantastic. So to answer your question, more people are awake today than they were in the 80s because everyone is feeling the effects of inflation and your dollar not being worth much, and a $500,000 home being what it takes to build anything anymore. So there are a significant more, a higher percentage that would be susceptible to understanding what our options are. And it's time that they know.
And it's a country that is being rigged to benefit the private corporations. And just to give you another example, a lot of Americans no longer have a disposable income that they might have had in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, because the federal government is doling out so many freebies to these newcomers. Mm-hmm. Well, the newcomers are given, I think I read somewhere, some are given at least $4,000 a month in a credit card. They can just spend whatever they want. Well, these newcomers are able to then buy they have no concerns about debt or having to generate income. And they in turn are able to buy the goods and services that are provided by the corporations at inflated prices, thereby generating further profits for those corporations while the ordinary American is left holding the debt. So I think this is another example where we're being forced to incur debt that is not, serving the nation or its people.
Yeah, at every turn, we come back to the same story. We're being forced to be beholden to someone else because we owe them money.
Correct. And it's through the beholding of money that the elites are able to take our country and our homes and our assets away from us. And when you begin to scratch the surface, you'll see that this was done illegally under color of law, fraudulently in many cases, and that in turn provides us grounds to challenge it.
You just answered another question that I've been asking people without knowing you answered a question. We have states, including my home state, North Dakota, my home state of Nebraska, plus North Dakota, plus Montana, and states that I don't know about, who are right now pursuing elimination of property tax because our property tax is out of control. Mm-hmm. And South Dakota is talking about it as well, and Iowa's got some issues. My personal property tax on our land since 2006, Susan, has increased by now 300%.
Wow. And
annually. And the concern has been brought about that if we eliminate property tax, we're going to give an unfair advantage to those out. So because every state wants to do is transfer the property tax burden of government spending over to a sales tax. So it'd be a consumption tax, so to speak, which on the surface maybe sounds like a good idea. And I've been fighting property tax problems for 6 years, day in and day out. But I now see that we're transferring the burden to a place where it's going to create an advantage to people who don't live here to purchase this property and not pay any consumption tax, if you follow what I'm saying, and not pay any property tax. So by doing this, we're giving an incentive to somebody in China or in Kansas or wherever to buy property and not contribute to the overall tax burden of the state? The answer is not to change one tax for another tax. The answer is to spend less money.
Right, to spend less money. It's also to do a full audit of the books and to determine what is a legitimate or an illegitimate tax, and then to forge your solutions accordingly. And I think if you go through like the channels, I think there are channels
internationally. Susan Bradford picks it up once again. I'm right in the middle of her sentence. We're back with the last segment after this. Welcome back, Roll Route, Trent Luce. I think there are examples. This is where Susan Bradford's going to pick it up before, but before she does that, I want to talk about healthy living and the element that is.
I think there are channels through these international organizations. I think, you know, for example, Indian tribes can appeal as sovereign nations. They can appeal to assistance through the United Nations. I know that the United Nations is a boogeyman for a lot of people because it's like the semblance of a world government, but there have been loopholes that have been provided for nations because it was set up in principle to respect the sovereign nationality, sovereignty of every nation. Our sovereignty is being violated at every turn, and in those violations, we have an infringement upon by way of international law. So we can appeal to, there are tools within the United Nations to usurp these foreign interests that are meddling within our affairs to wipe out that that debt. And I think as part of that process, you can also prevent foreign interests, like you're talking about China, from owning national assets. And I think that makes sense because right now I've seen a lot of homes, a lot of real estate, a lot of businesses are being owned by foreigners. I've even seen instances where the Biden administration has boasted that they're investing money into our economy to create AI and other industries for the American people to make us a global leader. But then they in turn are giving those contracts to foreign corporations that are working in the United States, and those jobs are being given to foreign workers. So they're not in effect helping the American people. In turn, the federal government is creating an illegal and illegitimate debt, and it is a debt that can be challenged and probably should be challenged.
Okay, so yeah, now you the first time in how many weeks you've said something that caused me to stop and think that initially I don't agree with, but I want to have a discussion about it, and that is the United Nations. I despise the United Nations. We give them $18 billion a year. We're the 22% of their total operating budget. The interesting thing about that $18 billion a year is that by our membership status and what our GDP is, we should be giving them 17% of what we're giving them. And I just think it's a total waste of money. But you just said something that made me think, well, if we're going to be sending them money and wasting it anyway, if there's a way to use them to assist us because we're already there, then we should pursue that.
I agree with everything you've said. And the United Nations was created for as a means for the creditor nations. The United States used to be a creditor nation to extend their and project their hegemony around the world, to place the third world nations into their debt and under their control. But the UN has effectively been used against us. Like it's
you
a mechanism.
Will call Dr. Ward at 531-246-27.
I have no idea what's going on there, Susan. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
Technical malfunction. I got people talking to me that I don't know.
That's okay. So I think the UN has been weaponized against us. It's kind of drawn us further into globalism. We're giving them a lot of money. I know that some of the UN officials may have been involved in sex trafficking and these other scandals.
66,000 allegations of sex trafficking and rape charges against UN employees.
Yes, that's correct. And there's a lot of corruption there that needs to be addressed. However, there are tools and norms that were established. Among them is national sovereignty and the right of colonial nations to repudiate their debt. And we have been colonized, and there are, therefore legal tools, and we're paying into them. We might as well, use those tools and use the legal foundations that have been established by creditor nations to restore their own sovereignty, to restore our own. Because there is a legal precedence there.
Matt, you brought something for me to ruminate on that I hadn't previously considered.
I'm not an advocate of the UN, just to let you know, but I think we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bath water either, that there are some, good, useful aspects of this.
Well, a very dear friend of mine for a long time, Kip Thom, he was during the Trump administration the director of the World Food Program for the United States, and he was in Rome, and he could not speak more highly of the work that the World Food Program does as part of the United Nations. He'd be the first to tell you that he agrees with me 100%. What's happening on the other side of the hall, so to speak, is an atrocity.
Is it true with these food programs that we're subsidizing farmers to send our food all over the world, and yet Americans can't afford their own groceries?
That's a true story.
Why is that being allowed?
Why do we allow many of the things that we do? Because number one, people don't know and they don't recognize. I mean, just think about the concept. How many young people do you know? I know tons. In fact, I know one right now that was a dear friend of our daughter's, and she's doing mission work in Panama. You know how much mission work could be done in the United States? But all of these young kids, they want to go on a mission trip and go help somebody in Haiti instead of helping somebody in Hawaii. Good
You're right.
example. But it just seems as though we've developed this compassion for people that live in another country. And I think that that's been bred into us, that we are fortunate, everybody else is unfortunate. But the truth of the matter is that if you look around in your own community, you got people that need assistance, and the assistance should come from the community, not the federal government.
I agree with that. And I think since we were established as a Christian nation, I think our people naturally are inclined to be charitable, kind, generous towards others. And I think that generosity has been kind of used against us. It's been exploited,
I
well, as a
think you just
Christian.
nailed it. I think that's it right there.
Yes, and I think also with these food programs, I think Ivanka Trump may have been involved in it, and she made was given a very lucrative multimillion-dollar contract to distribute food overseas. So, she was able to burnish her credentials as a great philanthropist, but it was done on the backs of taxpayers, and ultimately on the backs of the citizens who could have used that food here at home.
So, just so you know, we have 5 minutes left. Have we figured out how to get rid of our debt yet as a nation?
I have put some of the legal references in my Substack. I don't want to bore your audience with
Excellent.
all of those details. I've also included a few links. We do have the legal precedents to do it. So I wanted to maybe encourage your audience to kind of think in those lines, and even to think locally on what they can do at their own level, where they happen to be, to start making small and then ultimately bigger changes. Have we figured out what to do? You want to figure out, is it we need to do an audit? Is it legal or illegal debt? Is it does the public owe this debt? Was it being accrued with the consent of the American people in their interests? Are we assuming the debt of a successor regime, like through a bankruptcy reorganization, through the process of colonialization or colonization? There are different I guess methods, different strategies, different ways in which the debt can be challenged. I think that the United States does meet the criteria for successful challenges in other countries, that other nations have pursued. on that basis in order to have their own debt repudiated. So I do think that we can do it. I unfortunately, I'm not an attorney. Otherwise, I'd like to advise you. The UN has been one way for them to do it. I think the lawyers are also recommending setting up a legitimate citizens tribunal. And then the debt would have to be repudiated by the nation. And as we, the people, we can compel our leaders. They have to answer to us that they represent and serve us to do something like this in order to serve and represent our interests best.
So there are many people in my circles that believe we need to call our own grand juries, and hold these people who've not been following the consent of the individuals who supposedly elect them to the accountability. Could that be part of this?
I think that would be a great solution. It would be done in fairness, equity, and in accordance with the law. But I think a citizen's jury, a tribunal, would be appropriate.
We just need somebody with the kahunas and the law expertise to start charging down the path is what we need.
I agree.
Because I had previously thought, and I have not had the official discussion with an attorney about this, but what is taking place, particularly with these illegals, according to this book in my pocket, the Constitution of the United States, it is an act of treason. And so my opinion is that we should, in some way, shape, or form, hold these elected officials and bureaucrats who are allowing this invasion of illegals into this country and rewarding them, as you've indicated, paying them and giving them basically whatever they need. We need to make them accountable for the treasonous acts that they're committing upon the people of this nation.
Correct. And it is being done, unfortunately, with the cooperation of the United Nations, because the United Nations has established a human right for every individual to migrate to whatever country they want, and then for that host country to then take care of them. But it's also voluntary as to whether that country does agree to take care of them. So our leaders are choosing to do that. And in so doing, they're committing an act of treason. They're serving foreign interests over the American interests.
Susan, 1 minute. We have not, once again, we come down to the wire and we haven't let people know about your books. I want them to know about those and know where to access those if they want them.
Okay. You can link to my, thank you for that. I can link to my website through susanbradford.org and to my Substack through that webpage. And I think some of the best books in order to kind of get up to speed on the country, on how this treason was allowed to unfold and how the elite set up this racket, would be Royal Blood Lies, Tartar Treachery, which takes the agenda back to China, and then most recently, Taking Back America, which documents the money laundering, how the money laundering racket was set up within the United States through a number of administrations leading up to the present. That would be SusanBradford.org.
Susan Bradford, investigative journalist, always bringing us things that we've been thinking about but never really put our finger on. And she has the ability to say, here's what we need to do. And I appreciate that, Susan.
Thank you so much, Trent.
Can't wait to see what we uncover next week. We have successfully journeyed down that path, connecting food producers to food consumers. Hey, you know what? Here's the deal. We lay it all out there. The next step is up to you. What are you going to do about these atrocities which are brought upon us as legal citizens of this great nation? All roads do lead to a roll route. Let's talk about nitric oxide, the important element of healthy living. You get it from the atmosphere. You get it from sweating. I get it every day as a supplement from a tablet. NO2U.com, nitric oxide, N-O, number two, letter U.com. Trent, your coupon code. If you understand the cardiovascular system, you understand how nitric oxide works. If you understand every single function in your body, including brain and mental and thinking clearly and blood flowing to the extremities of your body like it should, you'll want to take this nitric oxide supplement. Don't take my word for it. Dr. Nathan Bryan has the details. NO2U.com. NO, number two, letter U.com.